For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction with Chicago baseball expert Bruce Levine and Ryan McGuffey on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
The ovation you hear is for Anthony Rizzo. Anthony takes off his helmet as he will lead off the second inning for the Yankees. It's his first appearance at Wrigley since being traded back near the deadline of 2021.
Everything works out for a reason, and it's been a few years, but it's been a fun few years for me personally, playing in New York, loving the Yankees. But to come back here, I'll enjoy every second of it.
Welcome inside the clubhouse, Chicago's baseball fans. I'm Bruce Levine, along with my new co-host, Ryan McGuffey from NBC Sports Chicago. Been in this market for a million years. Ryan, welcome to our humble abode known as Inside the Clubhouse. I am pleased, very pleased to welcome you as my new co-host because David Haugh is front-running the Chicago Bears from now on, and you and I are left with Chicago baseball. Welcome.
Well, what a year to be left with Chicago baseball. No, Bruce, it's awesome to be with you. I'm honored to sit next to you. I've listened to the show for more than a million years, so pleased to be with you. I know we're going to have a ton of fun, and we got plenty to do today, and let's go, man. Like, we got a lot going on.
We do, and we start, of course, with the return of Anthony Rizzo, as you heard in the open, and his return for the first time since July of 2021. Ryan, your reflections on that return, and was it all that you thought it would be?
It was awesome. And look, you go back to that whole run with the Cubs. Anthony Rizzo was the heart and soul. I mean, I know KB was the MVP, but if I were building a statue of one person from the 2016 Cubs, it's Anthony Rizzo. What he represents to that organization, what he represented to this city, he gave it all right back to them. And I felt that yesterday in the ovation. I felt you could see, usually, you know, these things are always heartfelt. These guys step out of the box. It's bigger than they expect. It kind of it hits the heartstrings. And it seemed to me when Rizzo came out of the dugout at one point that he really felt it. Certainly when he stepped into the batter's box in the second inning, he felt it and he expected it. And when I reflect back on that team, and you and I were both with that club the whole year, I mean, 15, 16, 17, that player, what he gave, he'd always meet the media regardless of result. He'd always be available. He would never make excuses. And you know, now that we're almost a decade removed, it's crazy to think about that. We're almost a decade removed from that season. What he meant, I think there's a lot more perspective about who Anthony Rizzo was with that Cub team and who Anthony Rizzo is today still.
Let's listen to Rizzo as myself and other media people talk to him about his reflections after the game.
Everything works out for a reason, and it's been a few years, but it's been a fun few years for me personally, playing in New York, loving the Yankees. But to come back here, I'll enjoy every second of it.
That was one of the sound bites. We'll get to what he talked about after the game as well. But just watching him and the crowd react, we knew, Ryan, that this was going to be the biggest ovation of a former player. I can't. You know, John Lester was nice. Baez, Bryant was big. But this was by far, you know, the favorite, the guy that had been here the longest before they won the championship. the guy that gave his heart and soul along with his wife, Emily, to the city for raising so much money for pediatric cancer and Lurie Hospital. Just, you know, didn't live here in the off season, but you would never know it because he was so much in and out and such a fabric of what Chicago is all about.
I mean, he wasn't homegrown, but he kind of was at the same time. I mean, he was that first player that Theo and Jed identified as a guy to acquire for this, for the championship run. And it's, to me, it was fitting that the two players at the ground ball, you know, the ground ball's hit to Chris Bryant, the MVP, but the guy who catches the final out is the guy who is the icon. He's the heart and soul. And I can, I mean, that it's burned into my brain forever. The catch and then, you know, Rizzo with his arms up and sprinting towards Mike Montgomery. And it's crazy sometimes that that this many years goes by. And I know it's interleague and the Yankees are only here every couple of years now with the new format of the schedule. It still seems crazy to me that we've had two of those guys, Baez earlier this year, Rizzo yesterday, get that ovation. It feels at this point where both teams are. You think about the White Sox being so far removed in 2005, in even that rebuild, and then the Chicago Cubs in 2016. Those seasons feel so far removed from where we currently are that it's nice to get that cookie. Like the fans just that the reason 40,000 showed up at Wrigley Field yesterday wasn't to watch the Cubs and Yankees. It was to welcome Anthony Rizzo back.
312-644-6767. That's our number. Our phone lines, our text line. McGuffey will take all of your calls that are worthy, all your texts that are worthy, some of them that aren't. You know, so chime in, please. We're always interactive here and inside the clubhouse. And Ryan, when you you look at the Cubs welcoming in Rizzo and the Yankees, then all of a sudden after the introduction, the game starts and it's about Judge. It's about the Cubs' plight right now. It's about the Yankees being the Yankees. Your thoughts about the game?
The game played out exactly like the 2024 season for the Cubs. Why aren't the Cubs? Why don't the Cubs have a lineup that's feared? You know, why the Cubs are in the third biggest market. They act like they are in the third biggest market. They have a $240 million payroll. And then you look at the lineup and you're going, who scares you? Like, and then you look at the Yankees lineup and it's Judge, it's Soto, it's Riz, you know, down the lineup. And there's guys all up and down, and they play like they want to win, or they construct a team like they want to win the World Series. That should be frustrating. I mean, to have one hit. We've seen this from the Cubs. They have a 10-game stretch where they score almost 100 runs, and then they flatline for 10 games. And there's been that's the 2024 Cubs. That's right. That's why they're hovering around 500. That's why they're a couple games over. And you get good starting pitching from Jordan Wicks, right? I mean, he keeps you in the ballgame. Yeah. He does his job.
Three runs, five innings these days are – it's not the old quality start of 6-3, but it's – the modern version of a quality start.
And you get nothing. You get nothing behind him whatsoever. And it's just been that time and time and time again. Or you get it in right in the first two or three innings, and then you go silent for the next six, and then the bullpen can't hold it late.
It's interesting just to watch baseball in general right now outside of the two Chicago teams, Ryan, and the idea that what you said about the Cubs is reflective of what's going on in baseball, where the run production is not predictable on a daily basis. The average run scored is skewed by big games. For instance, the Cubs went from being 19th in run scored all the way down into single digits in run scored in baseball this year, just by that stretch of what you talked about, 100 runs in 10 games. So after the year, if you're an analyst and you're a numbers guy and you're a metrics guy, you look at the composite of runs scored, okay, and you go, eh, the Cubs finished eighth, you right. know, or ninth. You know, their runs, are that's good enough. You know, they can come back with the same team. No, I don't think they can. Now, the complexities of the contracts that the Cubs have, the inability to move if you wanted to move Ian Happ from left, if you wanted to move Suzuki and Wright, they have no trade contracts. You have Bellinger, who's in a total control of his fate, having an option for next year at $30 million and an option for 2026 at $20 million. So if you're a Hoyer and company, you're hamstrung as to what you can do. You can trade Nico Horner, okay? You know, Nico's not had his best year, right?
No.
So, okay. You know, again, what you mentioned when we opened the show is the Cubs lack Cody Bellinger from last year, okay? He's not there. He's a good player, but he's not the Cody Bellinger of last year. To his credit, he's been playing for 6 weeks with a broken finger. Horner played for over a month with a broken hand. Fans don't want to hear about it. They don't want to hear that, you know, you're doing really great considering what you have. They just want to see production.
Yeah, and when you sign, you look at Dansby Swanson. He's had a down year. He's got $177 million. You can't make excuses, though, for the money guys are making, not in this current baseball. You cannot. Well, we're paying him $71 million, and he's just not performing. No. If figure out your lineup based off of Cody Bellinger and more Cody Bellingers. Like, you can't just have, well, we signed Cody Bellinger. He's back. He's got a player option after this year. We're happy to have him back. And then just plug and play him like he's going to be this cleanup guy from the past when he won NL MVP.
You mentioned the $240 million that they've spent. That's a good amount of money, okay? I don't think people can complain about how much money the Cubs spent unless you're someone that said, well, you're about 50 or 60 million short of having a superstar in the middle of your lineup, okay?
Yeah.
You know, is Soto, Juan Soto, the answer to the middle of your lineup, the answer to your offensive problems moving forward? Does a $600 million contract scare you away?
Absolutely not. Again, what's the goal? Do you want to just be a team that goes out there and gets you to September, or do you want to be a team that plays the last game in October? And I know we can point to the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Texas Rangers from a year ago and say, well, you just got to get in. You do. You just got to get in, but you got to be good enough. If you look at the Diamondbacks, who lead the majors in runs scored, by the way, the Rangers and the Diamondbacks last year, you know where they finished in fielding percentage? 1-2. You shouldn't be that surprised that teams who get in aren't at the top or are at the top of the statistical categories when you actually break it all down. You can make an argument that both of those teams underachieved in the regular season to get into the postseason. But this underachieving stuff from April all the way through September is inexcusable to be the Cubs. The White Sox were a top 10 payroll spending team the last 5 years. What did that buy them? When you spend bad money, it doesn't equate to, well, we're in the top 10 in payroll.
Was the Texas Rangers spending the money they spent last year, and they spent a lot then and a lot in the offseason this year, was that worth it?
Hell yeah.
No, but I mean, you're a general manager, Ryan. You're sitting there with your plan for the next 5 years, okay? You won a World Series. You barely got in to the playoffs at all last year, and then you went on this crazy run where you won every game on the road in the playoffs, every mm-hmm. single one. You're Arizona. You barely got in. You didn't spend a lot of money, and you're back at it because your farm system created just about everything that you have. Which route are you going to take? You know, if you're a big city market like Chicago, they're trying to take the Arizona route as well as spend money.
You can't.
Can't do both.
You can't do both. You got to figure out who you are. Arizona knows that they can't spend the money that the Texas Rangers did a year ago, or the New York Yankees are going to continue to spend, or in the same division. Like, the Diamondbacks know that they have the big ticket item in their own division. The Dodgers could give a damn about what they spend. Shohei Ohtani, $700 million, Mookie Betts. They're an all-star lineup top to bottom. So they need to thread the needle to figure out how can they get to the top without being a billion-dollar spending organization. So they decided to draft well, develop well, and plug and play those players once they get here.
On the other side of town, they have a date with destiny coming up.
100%.
You're there all the time with the White Sox. You have been for years. Your thoughts about whether this record, and again, we're going to have a guest in our last hour, Craig Anderson from the 62 New York Mets, talk about that record, that team, the infamy of having the worst record in baseball. Is there any way that this story can be a positive one toward the end?
No. The only positive story on the Chicago White Sox this year is how Garrett Crochet developed into a top-line starter. I mean, can you think of another one? There's no other good story that the Chicago White Sox have had this season.
I think there's some development with Corey Lee behind the plate.
Okay.
I like where he's going. He's not a star. I think he can be an outstanding catcher in this league for a long time. I think there's young pitchers like Cannon that are coming along that you look to the pitching. I think there's some positives there. But
agreed. But
anyone that's driving right now or at home listening, they're going,
no,
that's not enough.
No, that's an organizational meeting type of positive. Yeah. Oh, after this season, Drew Thorpe looks good. Hopefully he can bounce back and be ready for spring training after the surgery. Jonathan Cannon obviously looks like a guy that can go quality start after quality start. But that doesn't – when you get at the end of the year, when you're the worst team in the history of the game and you look at the overall optics and what you have coming back, I'd make an argument that there's no one worth coming back in that entire lineup, and that includes Luis Robert. We can get into that later. But that this entire lineup has been a complete fail. It's the worst offense I've ever seen in my life. And there's a lot to back that up. Run scored approach, the shutouts – They are a dead hitting team, and there's really no way out. The cupboard is bare. When you look in AAA, AA, there's no five or six prospects coming through that door next year or the next 2 years. They got to figure this out. They may have to trade for the surplus of pitching to get bats. That's what the White Sox need to do most, is who are going to be our cornerstones. And from an offensive standpoint, going forward, you can't have one Cody Bellinger. It hasn't worked on the north side. You can't develop one guy and expect your pitching to take over.
312-644-6767. That's our phone number and text number here at The Score and inside the clubhouse. And Ryan, I will just have to ask you this. Do you have a handle on Chris Getz and his front office, or how much time should Sox fans give them to be the executives that they need to be?
I think there needs to be a clear, defined approach as to what and who they are and when there is a true timeline. I think that's fair to White Sox fans, to be quite honest with you. The rebuild failed. They had two playoff wins. They have completely bottomed out. They've lost 101 games, and it's going to be over 120 games this year. I don't see a scenario as of right now where they don't lose 100 next year. So what are fans doing? Fans need to know, what am I investing in? Who am I investing in? And when is the time for the window to open again? And if you just keep pushing that down the line, sorry, it's 2024, man. You need to be a little bit more transparent about that.
The one thing I hear from Sox fans the most is, we've just been ripped off of our fun during baseball season. Not winning a World Series, not necessarily going to the playoffs, just watching baseball and enjoying going to the ballpark, watching it on the television, listening to it on the radio. They just feel disenfranchised about that this year. And also the fact that they can't get their head around what you talked about, what it's going to be like next year. If they only lose 95 games last year, they improve by 30 games, is that going to be good enough for them?
That's a big improvement. Very few teams improve 30 games. We will talk about this and a ton more to come. We have Aramis Ramirez, Cubs legend, at the top of the 10 o'clock hour. I can't wait to talk to him because I think he's one of the most underrated baseball players in the history of this city. And remember, we want to remind you that baseball coverage on The Score is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out at tmobile.com/switch. It's Ryan McGuffey. It's Bruce Levine. It's Inside the Clubhouse. We'll be back.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And now the 3-2 pitch from Weaver. Paredes sits a big bouncer toward the middle, gloved by the second baseman, throws to first, and it is in time. And the Yankees have beaten the Cubs here at Wrigley.
Yeah, 3-0. The Yankees taking game one of a three-game series at Wrigley Field. I'm Ryan McGuffey with Bruce Levine on Inside the Clubhouse here on 670 The Score. The phone lines are open, and they are getting full. We have the text line going. Everyone's mad, Bruce. That's what I've learned. Everyone's mad in Chicago.
Mad because I'm still here and you're not doing the show alone.
Well, they should be thanking you because I think you're part of the part of the reason I'm here. So don't hate Bruce that much. I mean, it's not his fault that the Cubs can't hit and the White Sox are the worst team in the history
of baseball. Yes, it is, Ryan. You will find out very soon. As soon as you hit that first button, that it's mostly my fault and the media's fault. But let's proceed. Let's hear what our great listeners have to say.
Yeah, I think Mark from Oak Lawn, he's saying that the Cubs are trying to win and develop. I think that goes along with some of the stuff we were talking about in our first segment. So, Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. You know, I tell you, you got a great show. You talk about baseball. It's you stick with it, and it's all about baseball, and it's great. You know, the Cubs are, like I said, you know, they're trying to do both things. They think they can sign, like you hit the nail on the head when you said, you know, they signed Cody Bellinger, who's a great player, good player, but you need to have a three of those guys. You know, you just can't be, they get guys like Ian Happ, who's a, you know, he's an okay player, but he's a lifetime 240 hitter. You know, and then you make a signing at the shortstop, Dansby Swanson. He's hitting 230, you know, and he's getting $320 million or something, you know. So it's just, it's a combination of poor signings and not being committed to really going after big names. I think their players that they're trying to develop are coming along, but you can't have it both ways. You know, you're either going to develop and stick with that way and you're not committed to really winning that year, or you're going to be all in. And I get this, the one thing, I know who the Sox are. The Cubs try to fool you, telling you that there's some going for the World Series and all that. If I was a guy and I signed up for that marquee station, I'd call up and want my money back.
I mean, you bring up a lot of fair points, Mark, and thanks for the call. I mean, I'm looking at the box score from yesterday's game, okay? When you go up and down the lineup, I mean, think about the back of the baseball card here and not the 2024 statistics. But Gleyber Torres, and we all know him here in Chicago, former Cubs prospect traded for Aroldis Chapman. Gleyber Torres is leading off. Juan Soto's hitting second. Aaron Judge is hitting third. Mike Stanton's hitting fifth. Jazz Chisholm's hitting sixth. Anthony Rizzo's hitting seventh. That's what a competitive team in 2024 should look like, Bruce. That's what an offensive box score should look like. When you go to the Cubs, it's Ian Happ, it's Michael Bush, it's Suzuki, it's Bellinger, it's Paredes, it's Nico Horner, Dansby Swanson, Pete Crow Armstrong. So to Mark's point, they are trying to thread the needle and do both. You pay, when you do it right, you do one of two things. You develop, and then you pay those guys because you've made the decision to develop, or you develop, and then when they get to that big payday, you trade them like the Tampa Bay Rays, right, who that, identified who they are.
So that was the point that I was going to just say, and you hit it on the head. You have to develop enough talent for your team, but as well as the Gleyber Torres to trade for Chapman in order to finish the piece of the puzzle and win a World Series. You can make a great argument that without the Torres for Chapman trade, the Cubs are not winning a World Series. Not getting to the playoffs the way they did, not being dominant at the end, even though it was shaky because of the way that he had to continue to pitch throughout the playoffs. But regardless, the end result was because of the way they approached it at the end, because it's not just about spending money, which they did spend a lot of. It's having talent on your team and then plugging in the Judges and the Sotos. And again, you cannot develop all your own superstars. So at the right point of time, you have to be able to go out there and do it. Now, that said, Ryan, in this day and age in baseball, as the playoff system has been dumbed down to the point of teams that are going to be at some point below 500 making the playoffs, mm-hmm. and it's going to get worse after the next CBA, a lot of owners and general managers are saying, we don't have to spend that extra $60 million to get into the playoffs. But the pressure is on you, Mr. General Manager, and you, Mr. Manager, to make sure we get in, okay? Because we have to go to the playoffs. We don't have to win the World Series, but we have to go to the playoffs. And that has been the tug of war recently between front offices and ownership about we got to get in, yeah, but maybe we're not spending enough money to do it. Okay, that's the internal struggle going on throughout baseball right now.
I mean, and that's a success at this point. A success is making the playoffs. Forget the World Series. That should be the goal every year in this town. But honestly, the goal right now should just be get in. Get in and like at least be in the mix, in the conversation to ride a hot starting pitcher, to ride a couple of hot bats and see where it takes you.
The charge, though, is for a general manager to have a window, as we've always heard about, of 5 or 6 years.
They got to stop talking about it, though. They got to stop talking about this five or six
years. I don't disagree with you, but owners are successful business people from other fields initially.
Yes.
Okay. Almost 95-100% of the time. They bring in relatable general managers now who understand the numbers of the game, who understand business, who understand how corporations work, and also have to understand how baseball works. Okay. This is a very complicated matter. It's complicated because you have to satisfy your fan base with a great team. You have to satisfy your owner by understanding, moving your numbers around, and building a farm system, and then manipulating the numbers of the payroll and the money that they give you to work with. It's not always linear on either account.
Yeah, and that's why I want this idea of 5 to 6 year playoff windows, to me at this point, is completely obsolete. I would just focus on the season that is, and hopefully you have a couple of big prospects. That's why no top 100 prospect was traded at the deadline, because there's that pressure GMs feel like, well, I'm not going to get the money in the offseason. I think this guy's going to be really good. And so he's also, the GM's sitting there going, what am I doing? I don't have this stockpile of cash to throw at Juan Soto. I have four top 100 prospects, two of which aren't even close to being here next year. Do I trade them? I don't know. Can we afford this?
Well,
I don't know.
The biggest part of the problem economically for the teams right now is one that you and a lot of your people that you worked with are facing, and that is the RSNs are falling apart.
Yep.
And on September 30th, NBC Sports Chicago will go away. So the money that was coming in television-wise for all of the teams, including the Chicago teams, has changed significantly. It changes what the general managers can do. It changes everything around the team. So with that in mind, Ryan, there's no way to just monetize things exactly, because we don't know where the RSN world is going. We don't know where that $40 to $60 to $70 million that the teams aren't going to be getting over the next couple of years per year is going to be made up. Where's that money going to come
from? Yeah, and I don't think no one has that answer right now. 312-644-6767 is the phone line. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is Inside the Clubhouse. Let's take one more quickly before we have to hit a break, and it's Theo from River North, because the Cubs did spend a significant amount of money on their manager. It's the highest paid manager in the game. And Craig Counsell, Theo says Craig Counsell has no energy and it's affecting the Cubs. Theo, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, fellas. Hey, Bruce, real quickly, in the opener, were you suggesting the Cubs are a Juan Soto-like bat away from being a contender, before I make my point here? Because I was a little confused by that.
Would I say that would change the dynamic?
Yeah, it would definitely.
Yeah, it would definitely change the dynamic.
Okay, well, I got a lot of time for Bruce and a whole lot of respect for your professionalism, but
however,
I completely respectfully disagree with you here. And there are at least three bats. We'll take.
You got to start with one, buddy. Don't you?
Well, I know that, but suggesting there are Juan Soto is misleading. I think there are three bats.
Well, I'm not saying it's a World Series winner.
I'm saying it's a game changer as far as how your lineup is looked at, the pressure that he takes off from everybody else. The Cubs have a lot of good players.
Didn't they think Bellinger was that guy? But let me make that point. Let me just move on because I know you got to move quickly here. Mm-hmm. The roster construction is the problem, Bruce. And I say this because Jed and Carter are very good at hiring high character guys. I love this team as far as character guys. I hire them all day long to put together my accounting firm if I was holding one. But I feel they're woefully deficient in finding a healthy balance of big personality, high energy guys who also have good character. And that's precisely what this team is lacking. They came out yesterday, and for the life of me, they have no energy again. There's no charisma. There's no bat. And I look at them. They look like a bunch of bored guys just going through the motions. And I'm not the only one that feels this, Bruce. I know you're intimately involved with this team, but I look at that, and I say why, and I get back to counsel. I think he's a great baseball mind.
It's a great call. Let me ask you this. How did the Yankees win the game yesterday?
They're stacked top to bottom, but they also have better coaching.
Who drove in two of the three runs?
It was in the third inning. I can't remember.
It was Aaron Judge.
Aaron Judge. Right, but let me ask you this. Bruce, Craig is exactly the same energy as his team. And this is the problem I have. These guys come out day in, day out, and they look bored. And I'm kind of wondering, is Craig the right guy for this particular bunch of guys? Because they're just like him. And this is not an indictment on Craig, but I wonder if he's a better back-of-house guy or if he needs a different chemistry of team, because they all look like him in the dugout. And I'm looking like, you know, I think he's a better manager than Ross, but perhaps Ross was a better guy for this cast of characters that are on the team. This is not meshing. And if I see more of this next year, there's no energy type of stuff. I can't put my finger on it. You're in the dugout every day, Bruce, but there's no energy on this team, and it consistently gets back to this.
I think you hit on something really important, and thanks for your really good call and really, you know, really smart ideas. Ryan, what he's getting to is not the manager. It's leadership on the team.
Absolutely. And I could go for hours on just leadership, but rah-rah guys, I get it. Like
you, but these guys are all good ball players.
Right.
They have tremendous track records, but you cannot be a leader just when you say I'm a leader. Okay?
Leaders are not, you can't manufacture. No, like, they're not. No. Saying Tim Anderson was a leader because he led the league in hitting, that doesn't make a leader. If he doesn't have leadership qualities.
Right.
Leaders are, they're born.
David Ross is a big league manager and had a great career, not because he was a fantastic catcher, not because he was always a fantastic hitter. He was good at both, but he was a tremendous leader, okay? Yeah. One of the best in baseball history. He is going to be a manager again and a good one. But the idea that Craig Counsell is not a good manager, doesn't have the energy. And he did say he's probably a good manager, and he is. But they're not losing because Craig Counsell isn't Jim Harbaugh on the sidelines.
No.
That has nothing to do with it, okay? It has to come from within the clubhouse.
And Craig Counsell isn't going anywhere. We definitely know that. Aramis Ramirez at the top of the hour. We got Chin Music coming up after the break. And remember that the Cubs take on the Yankees at Wrigley Field today. Pre-game coverage begins at 12:45. Pat Hughes, Ron Coomer have the first pitch at 1:20 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. It's Inside the Clubhouse. We'll be back after this.
High and inside. Chin Music. A little Chin Music. Take that hitter for a ride.
It's time for some Chin Music.
Hey, how about a warning?
Sure. Watch out you don't get killed.
The because sometimes in baseball, you've got to send a strong message, especially when someone has it coming. Each Saturday, Inside the Clubhouse comes in high and tight with a response to something that deserves one, like this.
We've had these ups and downs during the course of the year, and they've been big ups and big downs, which has been, you know, difficult to reconcile intellectually. And then obviously, like I said, I think there's some park effects things, or, you know, like, that we have to take into account. Last year, it was the opposite. Last year, I think we were sixth in the league in run scoring, but our offense was really, really good at home last year. And last year, it was more middling average on the road. And I do wonder sometimes how much of that was the weather and, you know, how many games we played last year. It felt like the explosions we had last year were at home. I think, you know, I think of, you know, some series we had in August where the ball is flying all over the place. And so, like I said, I don't think it's probably a, you know, October conversation, not a, you know, now.
That's Cubs president Jed Hoyer talking about the up and down carnival ride of the Cubs offense in 2024 that Bruce and I have been talking about here on Inside the Clubhouse. I'm Ryan McGuffey. He's Bruce Levine. This is Chin Music. And Bruce, I believe that was your question to Jed Hoyer talking about the up and down offense that
we're
going to get into.
I ask a lot of dumb questions. Once in a while, I hit on a decent one. But in this case, this is why Jed and his people are going to have to take another look at it. Because, as we said earlier, the offensive numbers and the metrics are going to look like they scored enough runs at the end of the year. And the harsh reality was, that's not true. And that's where metrics leave you wanting, because of the fact that, I'll give you another number. In 2023, the Cubs were sixth in baseball in runs, but 24 of their games, they had 10 or more runs, okay? Mm. Which accounted for upwards of 25% of the runs that they scored on the season. So with that in mind, the consistency of the offense compared to the overall number of runs scored and people's wars, people's slugging, all of that stuff, it's just not relatable for somebody like me when it comes to looking at moving forward on whether your offense is good or not. I think the naked eye will tell you that, constructed the way it is right now, there has to be some additions and subtractions to the offense.
I'm going to give you a little peek behind the curtain here, okay? In April and August, the Cubs scored 290 runs. That's pretty damn good. They were 17 games over 500 in April and August. They're 35-18, scoring 290 runs. They scored 155 in August. They were 18-8. But in the months in between, May through July, the Cubs scored 308 runs. So they only scored, 18 more runs over 3 months than they did in those 2 months.
About 3.5 runs a game.
Yeah, it was a three-month stretch where they were 12 games under 500. So when you really, you don't have to even peek behind the curtain that much to find out the inconsistency of the offense is there month to month.
Right.
So you're overproducing in 1 month, and you're severely, drastically under achieving the next month. It just can't work that way.
But the solution to that is having a monster in your lineup. Okay.
Yep.
You need a guy that kills every day. Whether he kills or not, he's not going to hit a home run every day. Judge doesn't hit one every day. But the idea that when the opposing pitcher and catcher sit down before the game and do a game plan, everything revolves around the monster in the lineup. How are we going to pitch around him in big situations? The manager chimes in and says, look, the guy has 10 home runs in the last 30 games. We're going to have to walk him at certain points. You're not going to be able to pitch to him the way you want to. So the dynamic of the game and the concentration of the opposition changes when you have this monster in the lineup.
And there's a 312 texter here that I think it speaks perfectly to what you just said. The glaring issue for the Cubs is that their farm system has not produced any stud players. The front office doesn't want to spend money on expensive free agents, but yet their system isn't producing any stars. And that's true.
They spent $30 million on Bellinger, but he is not but the version
but
that
he's
he was
saying,
last
like the
year.
the Horners, the Haps, the Amayas.
But most teams have to be constructed that way. Okay,
agreed.
You have to have good players.
But if you're not going to spend big money, we're talking about 200. I mean, they spent 107. To be fair, they spent $177 million on Dansby Swanson. But if you're not going to spend $250 million or $350 million on an expensive free agent, you have to develop those studs in the minor leagues.
Look. I want to go out with my girlfriend's friend, okay?
But does she know about that?
But you can't always do it. Okay. You know, you can't always do it. It's going to take a little bit more for me to get to my girlfriend's friend to go out with. So in the case of having a really good player in the middle of your lineup as opposed to the monster, the beautiful monster, okay, it's a huge difference. It's unbelievably different. And again, it's not like Hoyer and company don't want that, okay? But there is a certain amount of money that you get. The Cubs spend a lot of money, and it's how you parse it out. How long you're locked into Ian Happ, how long you're locked into Suzuki. Both good players, both winning players, both guys that'll help you help a team win. Not necessarily the guy that's going to help you win a championship.
Well, I certainly look forward to hearing more about how Bruce is going to get to his girlfriend's friend on our After Hours podcast that we have yet to put together. But we got to hit a break because a Cubs legend, Cubs star, Cubs former All-Star and MVP vote getter, Aramis Ramirez is going to join us here at the top of the hour on the other side of the break. That's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.